stirring stuff there on Historic Bagpipes by a Scottish band. They go by the name of Seitan, which is spelled S-E-U-D-A-N, and that was the opening track from their album on Green Tracks record, Thurlock Gurram. We're delighted to welcome to the studio Professor Jim Flannery of the W.B. Yeats Foundation at Emory. He's here to talk to us about two exciting albums that have come our way. We're going to be playing you tracks from each of these over the next little while. One of them is called 13 Poems by W.B. Yeats, set to music by Kyle Alden. The title is Songs from Yeats's Be Loud Glade. And the other is from Mr. Mike Scott and the Waterboys, and it's from an album called An Appointment with Mr. Yeats. They're radically different albums.
Yeah, that's a good word, radically different. Kyle Alden's recording is much closer to the folk tradition itself. He's got the absolutely stunning Irish fiddler Athena Turgis on it, and another brilliant performer, Michael McDonald, I think his name is, on mandolin.
Mike Marshall, I think.
Mike Marshall, yeah. It stays very true to the folk tradition. I think the thing that really two recordings have in parallel is that they, the composers and performers, because they both fulfill both duties on it, obviously have a deep knowledge and a passion for Yeats. There were several pieces that actually I listened to totally afresh that I wouldn't have paid much attention to.
So they dug deep.
They dug deep. I mean, they really have done research into the work, and they've come up with this, very substantive themes. Yeats himself was hugely interested in the relationship between poetry and music. He had very strong ideas about it, and as so often occurs with Yeats, he contradicted his own ideas with some of the composers who set his work. For instance, the major enfant terrible of avant-garde classical music in the 1920s, a fellow named George Antheil, an American, he brought to Ireland to do a setting of one of his dance plays, The Only Jealousy of Emer. For all his care about the, if you will, the sanctity of the language, the sanctity of the rhythm, the sanctity of the melody, a lot of poets have had problems with composers setting their work because they already say there is music in the poetry already. And what a composer will do is add another kind of music on top of it. Yeats was very strict about that during his lifetime, and in both cases, you wonder, you know, what Yeats's response would have been. Scott takes far, far greater liberties with the texts than Alden does. But Yeats himself, in response to Antheil's work, he said that he was thrilled with it as a theatrical performance. He said the words were lost in a kaleidoscope of sound, and he was just thrilled with it. Because it worked. I experienced an appointment with Mr. Yeats, Mike Scott's recording. I experienced a live performance of it at the Abbey Theatre, where it ran for a week, to absolutely packed out audiences, and it was a theatrical extravaganza. The whole stage exploded with music and with musicians moving backwards and forwards and with lighting and so forth.
I think we'll start off, actually, the acoustic sounding Kyle Alden, maybe a few tracks from that, and then we'll move on to the Waterboys. So the first Kyle Alden couple of tracks we have lined up here are Brown Penny and the Lake Isle of Innisfree.
Well, Brown Penny is a delightful, playful little poem that Yeats wrote at the end of a volume, which was a rather dark volume otherwise, the 1910 volume, Green Helmet and Other Poems, in which Yeats, now a middle-aged and rueful over the failure of so many of his earlier ideals, one of the big ones, that he wouldn't win his beloved Maud Gonne, for whom he wrote some of the great love poets of history, the death of John Synge, the riots that greeted Synge's play by the Western World in 1907, and the hopes he had placed in the Abbey Theatre, the beacon of an intellectual and cultural renaissance in Ireland. Anyway, that volume of poems really deals with Yeats's disillusionment. But then what's delightful is that the volume closes with this playful little poem about the chances that one necessarily an artist must take in order to renew his creative energies, and the role that a lovely woman can play in that process.
And of course, the second selection we're going to play, the Lake Isle of Innisfree, is very well known.
The Lake Isle of Innisfree, Yeats described it as at one point somewhat in a recording. Maybe we can have a chance to listen to Yeats made in 1939, where he said it was about the only poem of his that ever became popular. And he was rather tired of doing it. But it's a poem that, like Thoreau's Walden, is everyone's encapsulates everyone's image of some ideal place that they can escape to in their imagination and find peace.
This is Kyle Alden performing Brown Penny and the Lake Isle of Innisfree.
I whispered, I am too young, and then I am old enough. Wherefore, I find out if I might love. Go and love, go and love your man. If the lady be young and fair, ah, penny, penny, brown penny, I am looped in the loops of her hair, in the loops of her hair. Oh, love is the crooked thing. There is nobody wise enough to find out all that is in it, for he would be thinking of love until the stars had run away and the shadows eaten the moon. Ah, penny, brown penny, one cannot begin it to soon begin. I whispered, I am too young, and then I am old enough, wherefore I threw a penny find out if I might love. Go and love, go and love, young man. If the lady be young and fair, a penny, brown penny, I am looped in the loops of her hair, in the loops of her hair. Go and love, young man. If the lady be young, and go now, and go to Innisfree, and a small cabin built there of clay and wattles made. 9 bean rows will I have there, and a hive for the honeybee, and I'll live alone in the beloved glade. And I shall have some peace there, where peace comes dropping slow, dropping from the veils of the morning to where the crickets sing. Midnight's all a glimmer, and noon a purple glow, and evening full of the linnet's wing. Will arise and go now, for always night and day I can hear lake water lapping with low sounds by the shore, while I stand on the roadway or on the pavement's gray, I can hear it in the deep heart's core. And I shall have some peace there, for peace comes dropping slow, dropping from the veils of the morning to where the cricket sings. midnight saw a glimmer, and noon a purple glow, and evening full of the linnet's wings. And I shall have some peace there, for peace comes dropping slow, dropping from the veils of the morning to where the cricket sings. At midnight saw the glimmer, and noon the purple glow, and evening full of the linnet's wings. And evening full of the linnet's wings.
That was Kyle Alden there from an interesting new album of his. It's all Yeats material, set to music by Kyle Alden himself. He's from the Bay Area. The album is called Songs from Yeats's Be Loud at Laid, and we heard Brown Penny there, followed by The Lake Isle of Innisfree, certainly the most famous words probably that Yeats ever wrote. Later on, we'll take a listen to Yeats himself reading The Lake Isle of Innisfree in the year that he passed away, 1939. But right now, we're going to take a listen to a little more of the Kyle Alden. Now, on this album, he is joined by Mike Marshall on mandolin and Athena Turgis, no stranger to the Celtic Show, on violin. And do you think that they add interesting accents to this, Jim?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think Mike Marshall, especially just taking imagery in the poetry and sort of extrapolating it and sort of spinning it out into the air like echoes of the resonances there. I think that's wonderful. And Athena does the same thing. I particularly like the way in her... she is just a staggeringly brilliant musician and fiddle player, and she has truly extraordinary sensitivity to the mystical dimension of Yeats, where she is restrained but insistent at the same time. She's very restrained but keeps on carrying you into a territory that touches you at some deeper level of the mind. It's surprising, actually, that Alden would have wanted to go there. Surprisingly, in a very good way.
It'd be interesting to know the backstory there of how they hooked up. So let's take a listen now to The Song of Wandering Angus, and then perhaps The Blessed. What can you tell us about those works?
Well, The Song of Wandering Angus is 1899. It's from The Wind Among the Reeds. It's a poem. I think I very often open up a class on Yeats with that poem without saying anything, and then you can spend a good three quarters of an hour talking about every symbol in it. But essentially it boils down to the quest of every human being for fulfillment, for self-realization. The last lines of it, the young man, who's now an old man, within the course of the poem, he moves throughout all the phases of life and says that to the end of his life he will continue to pursue, to pluck till time and times are done, the silver apples of the moon, the golden apples of the sun. I enjoy asking students what they think about in responding to those images, and there are different kinds of feelings that are obviously evoked by moon imagery and as opposed to sun imagery, because throughout history. But in many ways, it can be broken down in modern times to the two halves of the brain, the right and left brain, the knowledge of intuition, the knowledge of dreams, the knowledge of the feminine. The knowledge of darkness, and then the knowledge of science, the knowledge of rationality, the knowledge of living in the world. And to be complete, we have to know both kinds of knowledge. My students love that, because so many of them are both science and arts majors. That's what I think that poem deals with.
This is Kyle Alden singing The Song of Wandering Angus, and we'll follow that up with The Blessed. And this is from an album of 13 Yeats poems that he has set to original music, with nearly a word changed from the original. The album is called Songs from Yeats's Be Loud at Laid.
I went out to the hazel wood, 'cause a fire was in my head. I cut and peeled a hazel wand and hooked a berry to a thread. And when white moths were on the wing and moth-like stars were flickering out, I dropped the berry in a stream and caught a little silver trout. When I had laid it on the floor, I went to blow the fire aflame. But something rustled on the floor, someone called me by my name. fish had become a glimmering girl with apple blossom in her hair. Who called me by my name and ran and faded through the brightening air. Though I am old with wandering hollow lands and hilly lands, I'll find out where she has gone, kiss her lips and take her hands, and walk among the long dappled grass and pluck till time and times are done the silver apples of the moon, the golden apples of the sun. The silver apples of the moon, the golden apples of the sun. The cool called out, bending his head. Dahi came and stood with a blink in his eyes at the cave mouth between the wind and the wood. And Kul said, bending his knees, I have come by the windy way, gather the half of your blessedness, and learn to pray when you pray. I can bring you salmon out of the streams, and heron out of the skies. But Dahi folded his hands and smile with the secrets of God in his eye. A cool soul like a drifting smoke, all manner of blessed souls, women and children, young men with books, and old men with crozers and stones. Praise God and God's mother, Dahi said, for God and God's mother have sent the blessedest souls that walk in the world to fill your heart with content. Which is the blessedest, Kul said, where all are comely and good? Is it these that with golden thuribles are singing about the world? My eyes are blinking, Dahi said, with the secrets of God half blind. But I can see where the wind goes and follow the way of the wind. And blessedness goes where the wind goes, and when it is gone, we are dead. I can see the blessedest soul in the world. And he nods a drunken head, a drunken head. Blessedness comes in the night and the day, and whither the wise heart knows. And one has seen in the redness of wine the incorruptible rose. The drowsily drops faintly on him, and the sweetness of desire, while time and the world are ebbing away in twilights of doom and fire.
Time on WRFG is 6:30, 30 minutes to go. Our special guest today is Professor Jim Flannery of the W.B. Yeats Foundation at Emory. We've just been listening to selections from the first of two albums we're highlighting in this hour, albums of Yeats, lyrics set to music. And we've just heard four selections from Kyle Alden from his album Songs from Yeats's Be Loud Laid, for which he faithfully follows the words of Yeats. Now, we just heard the Song of Wandering Aengus and The Blessed, and The Blessed we didn't introduce, so what can you tell us about that one?
Published the same volume as the Song of Wandering Aengus, but his similar themes again, the longing, if you will, for spiritual transcendence, spiritual meaning, fulfillment. But he takes a totally different approach to The Blessed. I much prefer, I have to say, his version of The Blessed, where he just repeats the same motif over and over and over again. I think that by doing a sort of an overtly country version of the Song of Wandering Aengus, he takes away a lot of the resonance of it. It may have more of an immediate appeal, but the idiom basically doesn't invite us to dwell upon the real meaning of the poem. Whereas The Blessed, by repeating the stanzas over and over again, I especially love the stanza, and blessedness goes where the wind goes, and when it is gone, we are dead. I see the blessedest soul in the world, and he nods a drunken head. Well, blessedness comes in the night and the day, and whither the wise heart knows, and one has seen in the redness of wine the incorruptible rose. In other words, there are as many different forms of paradise as the longing itself that we have, the different kinds of human beings who live with that longing. I think he just opens that poem, which he called my attention to it. I really had never looked at that poem before, and he made me look at it in a new way. So I think that's a real achievement.
Well, let's take a listen now to William Butler Yeats himself. This is a recording made in 1939, year he passed away.
Yeah, 1939. He was an old man, and the voice is fragile, but in the middle stanza, for peace comes dropping slow, dropping from the veils of morning to where the crickets sing. You can see the real passion creep into his voice, and the yearning become exactly the same theme as in The Blessed, a lifelong quest for transcendence.
Well, it's 72 years since W.B. Yeats died. This is William Butler Yeats, the year he passed away, reading his most famous work.
I am going to begin with a poem of mine called The Lake Isle of Innisfree, because if you know anything about me, you will expect me to begin with it. It is the only poem of mine which is very widely known. I will arise and go now, and go to Innisfree, and a small cabin build there of clay and wattles made. 9 bean rows will I have there, a hive for the honey bee, and live alone in the bee-loud glade. And I shall have some peace there, for peace comes dropping slow, dropping from the vales of the morning to where the cricket sings. There midnight's all a glimmer, and noon a purple glow, and evening full of the linnet's wings. I will arise and go now, for always, night and day, I hear lake water lapping with low sounds by the shore, while I stand on the roadway or on the pavement's gray. I hear it in the deep heart's core.
William Butler Yeats himself pulled off an album called Now and In Time to Be, a musical celebration of the works of W.B. Yeats, which features all sorts of big names, including Van Morrison and Mike Scott and Sharon Shannon and Christy Moore and the Cranberries and Richard Harris and so on. Thanks for bringing that one down, Jim. We are going to move over now and talk about a new release, but maybe not a new project from Mr. Mike Scott of the Waterboys. Now, Mike Scott and the Waterboys set up shop in Ireland in the mid-80s, recorded an album there that was very famous and became kind of adopted by the Irish community. And apparently in 1990 he was wandering in Galway and somebody gave him a set of Yeats poems. And this turned out to be rather influential, as you discovered the following year in 1991 at the Abbey Theatre.
I did, yeah. Some of your listeners know I ran a Yeats festival at the Abbey from 1989 to 93, actually. The help of Bill Whelan, who later went on to compose Riverdance and was the music director of the Yeats Festival, we put on a concert every Sunday evening for the first time at the Abbey of a range of musicians. Christy Moore, there was a reunion of Planxty, Paul Brady, Elvis Costello. In 1991, Mike Scott was one of the headliners, and I'll never forget Mike Scott striding out onto the stage with a volume of Yeats over his head, and he said, "This is the king." He was actually in an interview at the time that this project, the appointment with Mr. Yeats, was coming to its fulfillment, which was a week's performance at the Abbey Theatre. I was there at the time and was able to experience it.
That was last year, right?
Yeah.
2010.
Absolutely extraordinary experience. But in an interview, he said that he traced it back to that night at the Abbey when he carried the Book of Yeats with him and began that quest. He has a passion. He really has an utter passion for Yeats as someone who's really kind of wisdom literature for him.
But now, unlike Kyle Alden, he has taken some liberties with the words.
He's much, much bolder with the words, and he's much bolder, actually, with his arrangements as well. For instance, we're going to hear the Lake Isle of Industry. We just heard Mr. Yeats reciting. I'll never forget the jolt of kind of shocked amazement that went through the audience when that particular version of the Lake Isle of Industry opened up with a Dirty Blues riff. I don't think it's on the recording, but there was a Dirty Blues sax that he brought into it. Again, just sort of forced you to look at a lot of these familiar poems from a sideways direction, challenged all the suppositions about them, and made you listen to them completely anew. And there really was an integrity in what he did that I think comes through. I don't like all of the stuff, but, you know, it's a matter of taste. I respect his courage. I respect his commitment. I respect he's a genius as a musician, a hugely talented, multi-talented guy, plays a variety of instruments, and part of the joy of that whole experience theatrically was simply seeing Mike Scott as sort of the magus in the center of it all, moving from piano to guitar to singing to, conducting everybody, and it was kind of like revisiting a contemporary sensibility, dealing with the gigantic mind of Yeats and his own sensibility, seeing filtering it through the genius of a young man.
Well, here's Mr. Mike Scott, and with a little help from other friends and the Waterboys, the album's called An Appointment with Mr. Yeats. We'll take a listen to two tracks, starting off with his take on the Lake Isle of Innisfree.
I will arise and go now, and go to Innisfree. 9 bean rows will I have there, and a hive for the honeybee. And a small cabin of clay and wattles made. And I will live alone in the bee-loud glade. And I will have some peace there, for peace comes dropping slow, where midnight's all a glimmer and noons of purple glow, dropping from the veils of morning to where the cricket sings. And the evening full, full of the linnet's wings. I will arise and go now, for always night and day, when I stand on the roadside or on a pavement gray, I hear lake water lapping, low sounds of the shore. I hear it in the deep heart's core. Be remembered forever. They shall be alive forever. They shall be speaking forever. The people shall hear them forever. Let the sea bear witness. Let the wind bear witness. Let the earth bear witness. Let the stars bear witness. They shall be remembered forever. They shall be alive forever. They shall be speaking forever. The people shall hear them forever. Let the sea. Shall be speaking forever. The people shall hear them forever.
forever. They shall be remembered forever. They shall be alive forever. They shall be speaking forever. The people shall hear them forever. They shall be remembered forever. They shall be alive forever. They shall be speaking forever. Shall hear them forever. They shall be remembered forever. They shall be alive forever. They shall be speaking forever. The people shall hear them forever.
Mike Scott on the Waterboys there with a track called Let the Earth Bear Witness, and we started off with the Waterboys version of The Lake Isle of Innisfree. These tracks are both taken from a new Waterboys album called An Appointment with Mr. Yeats, which I guess got its stage debut about a year and a half ago in Ireland. My special guest Jim Flannery here of the Yeats Foundation at Emory was fortunate enough to be at that concert. Now, what can you tell us about the last one we just heard, Let the Earth Bear Witness?
That's really remarkable what he's done with that. It's from perhaps the most overtly political play Yeats ever wrote, Kathleen O'Houlihan. Years after that play was produced, 1902, he wrote another poem in which he asked a question: did that play of mine send out certain men the English shot? And with Maud Gonne herself playing the role of Kathleen, a symbol of Ireland herself, famous last line of the play, did the young father ask the boy if he'd seen an old woman passing down the road, and he says, "I did not," as the boy said, "I saw a young girl, and she had the walk of a queen." It's an apocalyptic poem about the resurrection of Ireland, actually, in political terms. Ireland's coming to a freedom, both political and also spiritual and cultural. Listening to it at the Abbey again, it was absolutely extraordinary at the end of that program, because it was Yeats, of course, founded the Abbey Theatre as a center of a renaissance, that was called the Irish Literary Renaissance, the Irish Revival, as a center of a very, very dark time in Irish history, as a center of a reawakening of the spirit of Ireland. Arguably, what Yeats and his colleagues did there with the Irish Literary Revival, you wouldn't have everything from, you know, U2 and Brian Friel and a host of other, you know, internationally known artists, Bill Whelan, Riverdance, all of that could be said to... Nobody believed in the nation. They didn't. It was very much a defeated culture, a totally colonized culture. So Mike is tapping into that energy that lay in Yeats and lay behind this of an Ireland possibility. And it was just extraordinarily powerful to experience that in that context. And his commitment to it. He's a Scotsman by background, actually, but he lives in Ireland now, and has a huge commitment to all those ideas.
Well, let's go out with one more song from this album. We've been playing selections from two albums, which have about 27 items between them, and we've only had a chance to hear a few from each. Earlier, we heard tracks from Kyle Alden's album, songs from Yeats's Be Loud It Laid, and we're finishing up here with selections from the Waterboys' most recent album called An Appointment with Mr. Yeats. I think Politics was the one we selected to play last.
Politics. The last poem, as scholars have recently discovered, that Yeats wanted printed as the farewell, if you will, to his farewell to poetry for the reader. Although the title is Politics, written in 1939, evokes the catastrophe on the horizon from fascism, the Russian Revolution, communism, and, of course, the Nazis. Yeats basically brings it back to something that is more humane, more endearing, more intimate than that, and that is the politics, most important politics, and that is of love itself.
Well, thank you very much, Jim. Our special guest today was Professor Jim Flannery of Emory's W.B. Yeats Foundation. Thanks for coming down and sharing your words of wisdom and your observations and, of course, your experiences seeing some of this performed live at the Abbey 20 years ago and last year.
Standing there, are on Russian, are on Spanish politics. Yet he's a traveled man who knows what he talks about. And there's a politician that has read and thought. And maybe what they say is true of war, and war is a lord's. But oh, that I were young again and held in my arms.
How can I, that girl standing there, my attention fix on Roman or on Russian or on Spanish politics? Yet here's a trap.
From Scotland there, that was Ian Hardy and the Old Bean Waltz set. We're going to leave you and love you with a Welsh lullaby sung for us by the Celtic Tenors. It's from an album called Feels Like Home. This is Sue O'Gan. Take care, be good, and we'll talk to you next Sunday.
Brech iai mam sy'n dyn am danat, cariad mam sy'n dan fymron. Nichad i mam harith gynten, ni wna i'n dyn oth i gam. Un andawel Blentyn hyn a'n fwyn o fron dyfan hyn a'n dawel hen o hyna hyn a'n fwyn y trws eilin am yr oed yn awn gwenni gwenni'n dirio I am a Leon Brees in Gwenny, on a tea and Gwenny clon, tith and Gwenny old and he know, he on tower. Gofni dim und deilen gyr a gyro ar y ddor paid a gofni tôn fach unig si a si ar lan y môr hyn a blentyn nid oes yma Dim i roddi ti fraw Gwen a'n dawel yn fawr
Menwes, Adet Engi.